Free rides are on tap for local seniors to get their COVID vaccine. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross. And this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead, a conversation with the CEO of the Jacksonville Transportation Authority. Give us a call now. It's 549-2937. Then later, we're celebrating the great outdoors. Wild Florida is back. That's coming up with a whole lot more. But first this morning, the latest numbers on the pandemic. The State Department of Health reports cases increased overnight by 7,128. The cumulative total of COVID cases over the length of the pandemic now stands at 1.88 million. Here's a good number. Hospitalizations ticked down a bit, but deaths rose. We have topped 30,000 deaths from the virus in the state. Here's another number. Nearly 2.8 Florida residents have had at least one dose of COVID vaccine so far. And as we've been reporting on this show and at WJCT News, vaccination sites are increasing around the region. There will be a new federal site opening up next week at the Gateway Town Center. Now, to go along with that, we want to begin by letting everyone know that JTA will be providing free rides for seniors and other groups slated for vaccination to some key vaccination sites in this area. We're pleased to welcome Nat Ford, CEO of the Jacksonville Transportation Authority, with news on that and a lot of other transportation discussion. Nat, good to have you back on the show. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Thank you.
So good to have you. What are your questions for Nat Ford, CEO of the Jacksonville Transportation Authority? We'll be talking about COVID rides, but other news about this city's transportation agency and efforts to beef up our transportation network. 549-2937. Give us a call. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. And our Facebook page is open. All right, let's begin with this news, Nat, that JTA is going to offer free rides for seniors and other eligible recipients to a couple of sites in Jacksonville so that they can get the COVID vaccine. The Regency Mall site, yes, and the new Gateway Town Center site. Tell us how this will work.
Well, Melissa, thank you for the opportunity, because we're really trying to get the word out related to using JTA services to get to the vaccination sites. And so now we're, you know, at this moment, we're providing free rides to seniors and other eligible recipients when we, you know, and we're talking about hospital workers and individuals who are in the initial population that's available to receive the vaccination. Right now, the first site is the Regency Mall. We already had six bus routes that actually served that facility. We saw an opportunity to add another stop to get people closer to the actual mall, because, you know, our bus stop is actually on the Atlantic Boulevard, and it was quite a bit of distance for a walk to the entryway for the vaccination site. So we actually restructured our route so we got folks right to the front door. So far, we've helped over 500 people get to the site. Doesn't sound a lot, but, you know, if you're a senior who doesn't have a car or have no means to get to that site, I think it's very important to them.
Sure.
We also have what's called our Ready Ride Zone. And Ready Ride, we have 11 Ready Ride Zones, which are much smaller vehicles. It's on demand. We actually expanded the Arlington Ready Ride Zone so it would cover the Spring Park area and also serve the Regency Mall Vaccination Center. We plan to do the same thing as it relates to the Gateway Town Center site that will open up next week. It is currently served by the First Coast Flyer Green line and routes 12, 21, and 41. So we have a great deal of service already covering a lot of the site locations that have been identified. And now we're creating another north side ready ride zone that will actually cover the northwest core and the east side zone. So the JTA is well prepared to actually make sure that every citizen who wants to get to a vaccination site, they'll be provided a trip using the JTA.
Okay. How can seniors and other people eligible for the vaccine, if they're hearing about this right now for the first time, hearing about your Ride to Health program is what you're calling it, what's the easiest way for them to book their ride, get their ride?
Right. The easiest way is to go to the JTA site, the JTAFLA.com. If you can get to that site, we will be able to provide you the link to the phone numbers to call in, and you also can work through the city's Department of Health, because the Department of Health, actually, we're working in coordination with them, so we're making it as easy as possible. We've got a number of senior citizen centers that are also providing that direct connect to the JTA for that for those trips if you need to request one.
And if someone doesn't have internet access, is there a number they should call to access a free ride to a COVID site?
Okay. While we're talking, I'm pulling that number up right now so I can make sure we get it out to your listeners.
Sure, and I'm trying to look on your website, too, because the digital divide is real, and we try to be mindful of that. Okay, I see a number here, 904-679-4555, to book a ready ride. Will that work?
Yes, it will.
Okay.
In fact, you got it quicker than I did.
Hey, all the years of doing this show, my laptop is my best friend in here in Studio 5. Again, if you don't have internet access and you need a free ride to a COVID vaccination site from JTA, call 904-679-4555. As we speak with JTA CEO Nat Ford, we'll go to your calls in a moment. Lots of calls coming in. And that number to join us is 549-2937. Okay, so the pandemic certainly has complicated your mission, Nat, as you try to help people with this critical need. But let me, if I could, transition to asking you a little bit more broadly about what you've been doing at JTA, the new transportation hub that is open now in the city's urban core, and your plans to increase transportation options for people in this city and make it easier for people to get around. Bring us up to date, if you could.
Right. We're excited about the new Jacksonville Regional Transportation Center, and it was a project that was in the plans for some years, and we were able to fortunately move it forward and build a true Grand Central Station, I think, for Northeast Florida. And now with our services that are connecting to the JRTC, it's not just our Duval County or Jacksonville oriented transit operation. We actually now have express services to our neighboring counties. So we are actually providing express select service from St. John's County and from Nassau County. The JTA also now, through an interlocal agreement, operates services in Clay County. And so the JTA over the past few years have actually expanded our area of outreach in terms of connectivity and transportation. Interestingly enough, a 40-foot bus is, one size doesn't fit all. And what we've also have done is started to diversify our services. I mentioned the Ready Ride service a few moments ago, and now we have 11 Ready Ride zones which operate door-to-door, and it provides connectivity in those areas that are not dense enough for a 40-foot bus, but you still have mobility needs. And then you probably have heard about our partnerships with GoTuckin, where we support GoTuckin for trips that are in and around downtown for local restaurants and businesses and residents who live in town, as well as Beachside Buggy, which we operate and support the operations out there in the beaches area. And so we have really diversified our fleet and our operation. And then the big project is the Skyway and the future of the Skyway and our refurbishment of it, and then converting it to an automated vehicle operation that will go from the 2.5-mile Skyway to a 10-mile network, actually expanding the reach of the Skyway in the downtown core. And I'm happy to announce that later today we will be bringing to the JTA Board of Directors a proposal to build the first new station in almost 20 years for Brooklyn, and the Skyway Brooklyn station being planned. Yes.
Where exactly will it go?
For those who are very familiar with the Brooklyn area, our actual operations and maintenance facility is located right on the tip of Brooklyn, across from the Times Union, or what used to be the Times Union building, and then you have the shopping center that has recently developed there, along with the the Haskell Building, YMCA is in that area. A number of apartment complexes are being built in that particular area, along with the new FIS campus. And so it's a no-brainer. It makes perfect sense considering some of the congestion issues there for us to, at grade, be able to, for $1.2 million, to build this new station and connect downtown core with the Skyway system. And so we're very excited about that, and we'll be bringing it to our board later this afternoon.
That's really interesting news. Let's go to lots of calls now for Nat Ford, CEO of JTA. 549-2937, Mark in Mandarin. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning, Melissa. So I've been on your show several times to talk about Project Save Lives, the city of Jacksonville's opiate project that started as a pilot in 2017 and continues to be successful in trying to address and provide services to people in active addiction. And this call is to simply say thank you, because Mr. Ford met with myself and Councilman Gulliford about 2 years ago, and we brought to Mr. Ford a challenge that we had getting people into treatment recovery, and that challenge was transportation. And he absolutely graciously donated, I believe it was 1,500 cards that we now can offer to people in Project Save Lives to get them into treatment and recovery. And I just praise, you know, Mr. Ford for helping us identify and relieve those barriers.
Thanks for that, Mark. Nice to hear that.
And I really appreciate the recognition. I think at the JTA, we recognize that we have a much greater role than simply the road building we do and the buses that we operate and these different services. It's what those road projects, what the transit services actually provide to our community, the connectivity to healthcare, the connectivity to a great job, the connectivity to an education and the ability to advance your life. And in this particular case, being able to help your, you know, if you're in that unfortunate situation, to help you get out of that situation. And so our mission is much greater than the infrastructure that you see, our bus stops and our buses and the Skyway. It's what it means to members of our community and how we provide them an opportunity to achieve their dreams and achieve all of the different things that, you know, makes for a healthy and successful life. And so I really appreciate that comment. Thank you so much.
Rusty on the west side. Go ahead, Rusty.
Good morning, Director. The Brooklyn station is a winner. It's a winner. And because of the much maligned, insulted Skyway is a winner. Rail is the answer. Everything else is window dressing. Along those lines, you've got great-looking CSX tracks, which parallel 17 all the way from Orange Park. And there's plenty of room down there for park-and-ride lots. Following that north, that goes, you know, west of 95, cuts under 95, right to the old, Prime Osborne there. And that's where, you know, you've got everything going on and connecting with the Skyway. And it's complicated and there's technology involved, but Orlando has pulled this off with SunRail, Miami, you know, with TriRail and Brightline now. Those communities are getting it done. So can't we do the same?
Yeah, thank you for that, Rusty. I think Rusty reflects the frustration so many people have that we don't have a more built-out light rail network. I know that's something you've been focused on, Nat Ford. This Brooklyn extension, that's exciting news to hear it's going forward. Is it behind schedule, though? This has been in the plans for some time, isn't that right?
Well, the Brooklyn station, and it's very interesting, you know, I joined the JTA the end of 2012, and I recall watching how that Brooklyn area was starting to develop, and I think around 2015, we actually went after a grant to build a full-blown Skyway station. And when I say full-blown, that's with the elevators, escalators, it's at elevation. You know, it would have been much similar to what you see in a current Skyway station. We were very unfortunate to get the funding for that. Federal funding really supports those major investments. It's very rare for a local community to 100% cover the cost of that type of rail investment. But we never gave up on it as it relates to Brooklyn. We never gave up on it. And what we've, you know, in our creativity here, our engineers took a look at how we could actually use one of the service tracks that currently is in operation for our maintenance operation, use one of those service tracks, convert it to being a, you know, convert it by constructing a platform, making sure it was ADA accessible, and using a much more simpler solution to actually provide that connectivity in the Brooklyn. And so it's a very scaled down version of what you typically see with a Skyway station, but the actual transportation elements of it are just as good. And so we think that makes perfect sense. But to the caller's question about rail, we are looking at rail development in Northeast Florida, and there has been some discussions with our neighbors in St. Johns County in St. Augustine, in particular, city of St. Augustine. I don't want us to get too ahead of that discussion, because recognizing that our railroad partners in terms of CSX and FEC, that has to be done in conjunction and coordination with them. We cannot disrupt freight movements in this community, because freight is very important in terms of the vitality of our community. So those conversations are underway. There's been some preliminary studies in terms of what it would cost and how it could be operated in a way that doesn't disrupt freight. So please trust that those types of major investments in rail and commuter rail and light rail, they are being examined by the JTA, and we are meeting with officials to discuss those developments.
And I appreciate you saying that, Nat, but I have to tell you, I think you're the third or fourth JTA CEO I've interviewed over the years. We've been hearing this for so long. And yeah, we remain, you know, an overwhelmingly car-dependent community. At what point, you know, does this community get serious about really building out more of a network, particularly since automobiles are major drivers behind climate change? We do need other options.
That's right. And I would just point out, in terms of these rail investments, when you're talking about heavy rail, key factor is density. And does Northeast Florida have a policy around density that would support the major investment in rail, the land use policies, and the development of it? So, you know, interestingly enough, when I served as the CEO of MARTA, I was there as their CEO right after the 96 Olympics.
Atlanta, right? Yeah.
Exactly. The planning for the MARTA rail station, literally, the MARTA rail system, literally started almost 20 to 30 years prior to that. And in that, the development of that plan, you know, you have the land use activity that is developed as part of that plan, so you have the ridership that supports it. We're blessed with a very strong highway infrastructure. That infrastructure is going to get taxed going into the future, more congestion on 95 and some of our other highways. That is why that conversation around rail and development of rail is so critical now, because the construction and the timeline, you will be talking probably to another JTA CEO at some point when you cut that ribbon, because of the time it takes to do that. Mm. But we are having some discussions right now, as I mentioned, to actually leverage some of the freight corridors that are already in place. If we're successful in coordinating with, you know, the railroads, we may have something up running up a whole lot sooner. But the stations and development around the stations are going to be critical for the long-term sustainability. It's one thing to build it. It's another thing to have the ridership as well as the revenue to continue to support its upkeep and operation.
Andrew, Fleming Island. Hi, Andrew. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. And to your guests, good morning as well.
Good morning.
I just wanted to know, do you know if there is any provisions for the disabled that is under 65 to get the vaccine?
You mean to get the vaccine or get a ride, Andrew?
Well, get both.
Okay. Well, if you're immunocompromised and you are vulnerable to COVID, you can register to get in line to get the vaccine. You can do that at the state website.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Go ahead. And then theoretically, Nat Ford, he could get a ride if he needed one from you.
That's right.
He'd be eligible.
Yeah, and I'm trying to stay in my lane on some of these questions. The vaccination challenge is a very daunting one, but we're trying to provide access to anyone who needs a trip in our community, and so with that, just please call that number, and we'll get you set up and get you there once you're eligible for a vaccine.
Here's a tweet from one listener. Why don't they just give out the vaccinations at the La Villa transfer station? that's not a bad idea. Mark on the west side. Mark, go ahead.
Great question. Hey, Melissa, thanks for taking my call. I'm glad you pointed out the fact that we've heard numerous JTA CFOs or whoever talk about this before. I believe the last one that was before this guy pretty much has said, we kind of see the riderless Skyway Express as maybe a failed experiment, and we can't build anything new, or we can't get any new cars. We have to almost make – it's almost a handmade object, and we're kind of going to let it die. And then all of a sudden, and I saw in the paper this crazy story. You're talking about easing congestion with what? You've got, two cars running. They hold, 25, 50 people at most. You're going to make that poor area even more congested with the construction. And you're talking about tying it in with some future autonomous bus program that hasn't even been invented yet and hasn't been proven. You're taking a lot of money to do this that could be better used on some sort of real light rail system. This is just perplexing to me. Why won't you people let this thing die? It's not going to be part of any major transportation hub in the future. It's going to, light rail, maybe, but this ain't that. It's never been that. Just let it die, quit spending money on it, and turn it into a jogging trail.
Mark, thanks for the call. Nat, why not just get rid of the Skyway?
Well, interestingly enough, when I first arrived, that was the perspective, which was, let the Skyway die, tear it. In fact, the question was, Nat, when can you tear it down? And the interesting thing is that with the Skyway, the actual investment in a Skyway was not just a local investment. It was a federal investment that was made in a Skyway. And part of that federal investment has a requirement that you maintain it for what's called its useful life. And until we get to that point, if we were to tear the Skyway down, we would have to write a very large check back to the federal government for their investment in the facility. So that's one point. So you do have a cost in terms of tearing it down. You have a cost in terms of payback to the federal government, which actually funded a significant portion of the system being developed. The second thing is, I think the question about its usefulness. Well, when I arrived here in downtown Jacksonville, eight years or so ago, I think the question about downtown development and downtown the success of downtown Jacksonville was in question, and the Skyway suffered for that. But if you really take a look now with the influx of downtown residential and the influx of corporate headquarters in downtown Jacksonville and the banks that have now relocated, and if you look at the Brooklyn area, now the congestion issue, if we have a situation with everyone driving to downtown Jacksonville, we will have those congestion issues that will significantly impact our development and growth. So the Skyway, clearly, way ahead of its time, actually operating in some areas that don't have the density or have the ridership to support it. But the plan that I think that is being developed, starting with Andre Wallace, who was the head of the DIA, now with Lori Boyer, there is a great deal of investment and activity happening in downtown. If you look at the La Villa area, our headquarters building
You disagree with the criticism of where things stand downtown, and I know you were part of a new task force that the mayor gathered, and that had been criticized when we have a downtown tent city of homeless, not a lot of forward movement. You don't agree with that criticism?
Well, Well, I think there is, you know, rightfully so, some criticism as it relates to density downtown and activity downtown, but those are the problems of our downtown. And I've worked in a number of cities, and these challenges are not new and unique to Jacksonville in terms of dealing with the homeless, in terms of dealing with mobility in a downtown and biking and pedestrian access and public transit and having all of that holistically work harmony. And then also, I think we're in a good place. You know, the development activity that is being discussed, debated, argued about is a good problem to have. If we were to talk about light rail investment, you know, I think that at this juncture for downtown isn't a good discussion. I think commuter access to downtown via rail, that's a much more productive discussion. And then you do need a distributor system for downtown, which is the current Skyway system, and our plan to convert it to autonomous vehicles. One more thing I would like to add about autonomous vehicles. It's not a question of if. They're coming. It's a question of when. And fortunately for the JTAR project and the test and learn work that we're doing with manufacturers from around the world, puts us in a good position to have one of the first automated transit system networks in the country. Mm. And so I disagree with the caller.
I want to thank you so much again, JTAFLA.com, for more about Rides to Health, the free rides JTA is providing to COVID vaccination sites. Nat Ford is the CEO of JTA, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thank you, Melissa, and please have me back, because these are interesting discussions, and I think it's important to share some of these perspectives and information that the public may not know as to the how and whys of some of these decisions and what are some of the challenges.
You are welcome back anytime. Thanks, Nat. Yep. All right. Bye. Much more coming up later this month's Jacksonville Music Experience DJ Sessions, but up next.
Food and hospitality industry is an interesting focus. People are having the courage and able to work hard to achieve their goals.
The hospitality sector in Florida rebounding as the pandemic trails off. That's next. Well, Florida's hospitality sector has, of course, suffered greatly in the pandemic, but this is a resilient industry, and analysts say it is on its way back. I spoke about it with Lee Court, the founder of the Women's Food Alliance.
Hey, Lee Court, so good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us.
Well, I'm delighted to speak about hospitality today.
And you are most hospitable, and you know the business well. So what's it been like as we hopefully come out of this pandemic in the next several months for the hospitality industry, the tourism business around Northeast Florida?
You know, tourism and hospitality, yes, they are synergistic, but the food and hospitality industry is an interesting focus, too, that people are having the courage and able to work hard to achieve their goals today. I see a whole renewed interest in people who have reinvented themselves from either a position in an organization or returning to work with renewed vigor. Or starting something new that they were dreaming about doing, and they didn't have the time to do it in the past.
Really? Like, what are some examples?
Oh, my gosh. There is a fantastic couple. He is and was a special event photographer, and she an event planner. And over the year that their businesses were really shut down and quiet, they had time to focus on a project that they had been playing around with and more as a hobby for 2 years. And it's called Dattlegator, and it's a collection of interesting seasonings. And, I mean, they're an example of making the best of a bad situation and realizing that they loved working together and creating together, something they didn't do full-time when they were in their other careers.
It's exciting. Yeah, it's exciting to see people embracing that optimistic outlook and starting something they've always dreamed about, because it has been a difficult time. I mean, Visit Florida's reporting, you know, the industry, we've seen a 34% drop in visitors to Florida in 2020 compared to the prior. It's the lowest in a decade. And so, honestly, I guess we have nowhere to go but up in this sector right now.
I was just going to say that to you, that, you know, people are a little more optimistic right now. I think the word out in the neighborhood, and I use the neighborhood in our region, which is North Florida, South Georgia, is that people are optimistic and they're excited and they're feeling privileged that they do have an opportunity to reinvent either something that they were doing and come back to it, or have a job that was held for them, or moving ahead with something brand new and staying in the pipeline. I find that the people that I'm in contact with, they do more reading than they ever did. They're much more knowledgeable about what's happening in the broad picture of the industry instead of just their niche. Because when you're working hard in your niche, maybe you're not paying as much attention to everybody else and what's going on because you're busy.
Absolutely. Well, you've kept busy throughout this pandemic as well with the Women's Food Alliance, which has been spotlighted on this program. So you're really in close touch with creators and culinary and hospitality leaders.
What I've observed, Melissa, is that the Women's Food Alliance in particular has grown during COVID and during the past year, because the women who are in any aspect of hospitality, whether they're a caterer in specialty foods, whether they're a farmer, they want to join. They want to network. They have observed the fact that they do have time to select how they spend their time, you know, to prioritize certain things over other things. And the Women's Food Alliance has grown with amazing, amazing new members. But it's all about working hard and having the courage to say, yes, I can do it, and count on other people to support them, and vice versa.
Right. The network you've created has really been a source of support for an industry that has been hit hard. So it's exciting to see that it's growing.
The members just really cherish each other. And every time we do get a new member, it's rare for an organization in its entirety to reach out to a new member and say, hello, I'm here for you. And I notice that every day. So every week we have one or two members. I personally send an email to all of our members introducing the new member with a mini bio. So even before the new member has an opportunity to meet anybody in person, they're in the pipeline of the organization and women are reaching out to each other. And it's a beautiful thing to see.
Well, Lee Cord, who leads the Women's Food Alliance, it's good to get your insights about this important sector of the local economy. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure, and it's great to stay positive, isn't it?
Yes, we need to. Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa. Bye-bye.
Well, time to get outside now and enjoy the natural beauty of this place we call home as we edge closer to spring. It's today's Wild Florida with our contributor, Lisa Gruba. She's an environmental journalist and Florida master naturalist, and she's on the line to get us outside this month. Hey, Lisa.
Good morning, Melissa.
So good to hear your voice. So what do you see happening outdoors this month?
Well, we are entering, I think, my three favorite months of the year here in Florida, March, April, and May. We've got temperatures in the 60s and, you know, breezy conditions outside. The trees are just beginning to leaf out. Any minute now, we're going to have a profusion of wildflowers. The bird song right now is amazing, and that's because it's mating season, so the birds are all showing off to each other. So if you are out at dawn or dusk, you will just really hear literally what they call nature's first symphony. Manatees will be coming back into our river soon. They wintered down in central Florida in March. They come back up through the intercoastal, and then they'll go into the tributaries off the area rivers where they mate and give birth. So boaters, use your polarized glasses so you can keep an eye out for them. Kayakers and fishermen who are in the tributaries, also just be aware that they're in there. Out at our beaches, the shorebirds are nesting, and so you'll see a lot of places. They're mainly nesting in the dunes, and so you'll see a lot of the dunes are now roped off to keep people out of them. Also, please keep your pets out of them if you're at a beach that allows pets, because they tend to nest right on the ground, and the nests are camouflaged, difficult to see, so that's why they don't want people, you know, stomping around in the dunes. The right whales are still close in. They'll be headed back north very soon, but you can still see them if you're out at the beach. And one of my favorite things, we've still got two more months for St. Augustine oysters, about two more months, give or take water temperatures. Our local oysters come from St. Augustine, so you can still enjoy them for a little while. Now, I have two events to tell you about. Can you remember what an event is?
There are actual events coming? That's exciting.
I know. So I don't think I've reported on an event in a year, but the first one I want to tell you about is being put on by Jacksonville Parks Department out on the Baldwin Rail Trail. They're doing what they're calling a bike hike, which basically a parks naturalist will take you on a bike riding tour of the area. That's coming up Monday, March 1st. That's this Monday. It's from 11 to 11:45 a.m., and they're taking the first 10 people. It's only limited to 10 people. So if you want to get there, if you want to do it, you might get there earlier. The details for that are on the Facebook page for Jack's Parks, and that's J-A-X Parks. The second thing I want to tell you about is applications are open for the Summer Youth Apprentice Program with Groundworks Jack. Groundworks Jack is the group that has been restoring the urban trail system around the city known as the Emerald Trail. They take youth between the ages of 13 and 18, and they can participate in a variety of projects over the summer, like creating bee or butterfly gardens, creating urban gardens, or environmentally inspired art, just a huge variety of projects. So the application for that is open, and you'll want to go to their website for information, which is groundworksjacksonville.org.
Okay, so it's the Jack's Parks Facebook page for details on the March 1st bike ride. Groundworkjacksonville.org, go to that website for information about the Spring Fellowship.
Right. And even though we're seeing some events beginning to return, people are telling me that they're just getting more and more out of the time that they've spent in their backyards and local parks during this last year. My friend Melody is an avid hiker, and she and her husband hike all over the country. Her refrigerator is covered with national park stickers. She said that she has just been shocked at, you know, the amount of bird activity in her own backyard, and I feel the same way. I mean, in my yard, I've seen eagles, hawks, owls, and songbirds, and boy, they can get up to some drama that I never would have thought about before. So I've just been really enjoying it. Last May, if your listeners recall, I told them about a webinar by the Florida Wildflower Foundation about creating habitat in your own backyard. And they interviewed Dr. Doug Tallamy, a professor at the University of Delaware. And he said, basically, if you want wildlife, you need to provide something for them to eat. Seems common sense. So birds, for example, they eat caterpillars and insects. And in order to have caterpillars and insects, you need to have the right types of plants and trees, not just plants and trees. So he says that most insects only eat plants that they share an evolutionary history with. So in other words, native. So I did not know that, like crepe myrtle and the other Asian ornamentals are not native.
Not native.
And they just don't make enough food for caterpillars and insects. So after that webinar, I've now bought his book, and I'm working through that, and I really want to recommend it. It's called Bringing Nature Home, How You Can Sustain Wildlife with Native Plants.
All right, pick that one up. And so we know that we need to create native landscaping in Florida. It's important so that we can use less fertilizer, less water. It's just good for our yards, good for the environment. If you're not an expert gardener, though, how do you even get started on all of this?
Well, that is a great question because I am not an expert gardener. Luckily, this is not a talk show or my family would be burning up the phone lines to tell stories about what a menace I am in the backyard. I do not like to garden. I'd rather stomp around in
Surprised
the woods.
Surprised to hear
so
that. Okay.
So I do like the idea of planting native species to reduce work and increase your habitat. And so let me be clear. We're not talking about creating a yard that's a weedy mess. We've all seen those yards around town.
Yeah, they just let a thousand flowers bloom and a bunch of weeds, too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not my thing. And so Ptolemy has posted pictures of his own yard, which started out as just looks like acres of sod and a house. And over a 10-year period, by planting native, he transformed it, and it now looks like a lush, blooming English garden. So it was really inspiring. And so let me just real quickly read off this plant list of things that he says are native that he used in his yard. Virginia creeper, tulip tree, sweet gum, pawpaw, viburnum, goldenrod, persimmon, ash, maple, walnut, hickory, elm, pine, clematis, coral, honeysuckle vine. Those are many familiar names in our area. And so that makes it less daunting to me. Oh, I'm familiar with those. Another way that you can find out exactly what to plant in our area, you can go to the Native Plant Finder database on the National Wildlife Federation website. You type in your zip code, and it will give you a list of plants. And so I have been talking with somebody local here in Jacksonville who's been in this process. Catherine Taponi has been the education director for St. John's Riverkeeper for the last few years. She'll be leaving that position soon, but she's been in the process of changing her sod yard into all edibles, building raised beds. And she uses University of Florida's planting guide. You can literally Google that and it'll pop right up.
Okay.
University of Florida. Yeah.
Okay.
And
almost out of time, but we have 3 months ahead to get into all of this. So pretty cool
right.
information.
And you don't have to do it all at once is the main point. And it helps you to work with nature rather than against it.
Lisa Vick Gruba, regular contributor and leading us every month through Wild Florida, a Florida master naturalist. Thank you so much for being with
us. Thank you. See you out there.
Yes, get outside, everybody. And in a moment, while you're out there, listen to some music. We'll be right back with our Jacksonville Music Experience DJ Sessions, The Beautiful Noise of North Florida. That's next.
Many sexually active people know very little about sexually transmitted diseases, in part because they're awkward to talk about. Dr. Ina Park is a medical consultant at the CDC's Division of STD Prevention, and she joins us for an open conversation about how STDs are spread and how they affect the body. That's next time on Think. Tonight at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Farmers have struggled in this pandemic economy, but there is some light now at the end of that tunnel.
Markets have turned sharply higher since last harvest. And so, you know, I would say for the first time in 4 or 5 years, we can feel optimistic.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hogs and corn and soybeans, oh my. That's next time on Marketplace.
Tonight at 6, here on WJCT News 89.9.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Once COVID restrictions lift, British saxophonist Binker Goldin says new Brexit regulations will make touring in Europe near impossible.
It's a lot of hassle getting different visas from country to country and so on, and it's very, very expensive.
Brexit and the music industry, next time on Here and Now.
Today at 2 on WJCT News 89.9.
America's new defense secretary has a clear message to those who serve.
The job of the Department of Defense is to keep America safe from our enemies. But we can't do that if some of those enemies lie within our own ranks.
Many of those involved in the Capitol riot had ties to the military. All units have now been ordered to address extremism in the ranks. What can they do to fix the problem? Next time on 1A.
Today, starting at 10 on WJCT News 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, Jacksonville continues to loom large in popular music. Every month on this show, the Jacksonville Music Experience, JME, DJ Sessions, turns up the volume on the beautiful noise coming out of Northeast Florida. You can learn about all of these local artists and check out our playlists at wjct.org/jacksmusic. Void editor Matt Shaw has been listening, and he's curated some cuts for us. Hey, Matt. Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Thanks so much for having me.
Good to have you once again. So what are you liking to listen to this month?
Well, today I kind of wanted to listen to some more pared back, more rootsy kind of acoustic music. Kind of in a digital era for popular music with home recording studios, auto-tune, sampling, et cetera. But there's a lot of artists here in Jacksonville still to kind of like strip back, maybe vulnerable analog approach, even if they're taking advantage of kind of the trappings of modern music and recording in their bedrooms or whatever. So I picked out three local tunes today that are all kind of in that mellow, rootsy, analog space. The first one I wanted to start with was from a group, a trio called Stranger Wolf. They work in that kind of indie folk sphere, think like Fleet Foxes or Bon Iver, Bright Eyes. Local music fans here probably familiar with the group. They've been putting out music since 2014. They have a new EP out, a fittingly brooding title, All Is Borrowed, Nothing Lasts. And this song, it's called Empty Shelf, features a guest vocal from Lindsay Adamek. So let's listen to Stranger Wolf.
That's Stranger Wolf. Love them, Matt. They sound amazing.
Yeah. Great trio. So moving on to Chi Foreign. She fronts the popular local hip-hop group Love Culture, one of my favorite hip-hop acts in the city. She's a talented MC and singer as well. She put out a solo project maybe late 2019 called Selfish, full of really soulful singer-songwriter tunes. And last year, she cut a live version of the album accompanied by a local musician called Conduit. She recorded it at Friends of Friends Recording Studio here in Springfield. It's just raw vocals and guitar. It's really nice. I'm going to listen to the track called Questions from Selfish Live.
Pacing side to side, knees growing weaker. They could only see love is all we need. Will we even answer the door? Is it worth it? Worth it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Would would you wanna know? Would you wanna know?
Another winner. That's Shay Foran, but you have one more before we let you go.
Yeah, one more. This is a fella named Howdy, and he makes contemporary cowboy tunes, if you could imagine that. Mm. The song that I want to play is called El Paso, and it's pulled from a postcard that Landon Gay, who is Howdy, the namesake of Howdy, he wrote a postcard to a friend in California while he's on tour, turned it into this kind of love-struck ballad with pedal steel guitar, some tasteful finger picking. It's folk music with some like lo-fi duds worn on it. So let's listen to El Paso.
About you at a motel in Texas, sure beats that minimum wage, driving on highways, singing on stage, sunsetting over Mexico, and I can just see Juarez from El Paso.
Can't wait to hear. Wow. So Matt Shaw, this just gives you a taste of the amazing local talent we have in this town.
Yeah, a lot of good local music, and it's a nice day to roll your windows down and turn it up to 11.
That's right. Go to wjct.org/Jack's Music. It's our Jacksonville Music Experience DJ sessions and spinning for us today. Void editor Matt Shaw, we really value the partnership with Void. So Matt, thanks so much.
Thank you, Melissa. Appreciate you.
And let's close with a little more music. I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks so much for listening to First Coast Connect. You can catch our podcast up later today wherever you like to listen or through our WJCT app. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. See you then.
Running on his pride, pacing side to side, knees growing weak. They could only see love is all we need. Will we even answer the door? Is it worth it? Worth it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Would you wanna know? Would you wanna know? Yeah. Would you want to stay? Would you want to go? Yeah. Say, would you run again? Would you hold your own, yeah? Would you wanna know, yeah, yeah. See, baby starts to see, filling our whole reach, higher than her seat, she's falling down, The shawty sees her stress, looking up her dress, embracing her mess. Daddy showed him how. Arms
are open. Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.